This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. Kind of a strange weekend because I guess the feel for what's going on with the Seahawks. Big game. Is this the time that the Rams are ready to push ahead of the Seahawks in this division? Where the Seahawks stand? Injuries mount? All those different things. So we've got plenty to talk about over the next 3 hours. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Now, no show next week because of the holiday coming up. And, of course, I'll be flying to Dallas for the Cowboy game. So let's get in everything today and over the course of the next week. But, again, this is right now, I guess you call it a home stand. This is the stand. This is the stand right now to see where this franchise is. Are they still at the top level of the league? Are they ready to take a step back and maybe be a wild card or maybe not be a wild card? So 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with some headlines. Well, lots of news as far as what's going on with the Seahawks, good, bad, and indifferent as far as the injury front. KJ Wright is not going to be right now listed as doubtful because of the concussion, and that caught me by surprise because I talked to him after the game. He said he was going to be okay, but a lot of times with concussions, you simply don't know if things settle in a little bit late, and apparently it's not. They're going to try to at least see if he can clear concussion protocol today, but right now he's doubtful. But on the, maybe the encouraging word, they're going to test out Bobby Wagner today to see with that hamstring injury if he's going to be able to do anything. And if so, he's listed as questionable. That'll be a game-time decision. Nas Jones has an ankle injury. He's not going to be able to go. Right now, the Rams are in very good shape. I mean, the only doubtful player and the only injured player they have is their third-string quarterback, Brandon Allen. He's got a back injury. As far as other news in the National Football League, and of course, we got two games today, which I think is going to be fantastic, trying to see how that's going to go. Corey Peters is going to be out for the, right now, questionable for the Arizona Cardinals tomorrow. As far as Baltimore, I mean, they get about seven questionables led by Mike Wallace with an ankle injury, so that's not too good. Joe Mixon right now is questionable for the Cincinnati Bengals. Green Bay, now, of course, the news out of Green Bay is that Brett Favre should come off the injured reserve list today. They're still waiting to see whether they're going to have Nick Perry, their outside linebacker. Devin Funchess is questionable, Leonard Fournette right now questionable, hasn't been able to do too much this week after the Seahawks win that they had last week. So Cordy Glenn went on injured reserve for the Buffalo Bills. So that's going to be up there. In the big game between Pittsburgh and the New England Patriots, Joe Hayden is listed as questionable, so he has a chance to come back. New England in very good shape. Alan Branch is the only player about to miss that game. And, of course, that's up to date right now with your headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go. We're waiting to hear from JB and Rutton, so we're not right now. Let's go to Raider Jim. Jim, how are you?
Oh, hi, John. I was expecting to hear JB.
I know.
So, I'm glad I'm ready to go here.
Okay.
Yeah. John, you getting ready for Christmas and everything like that?
I haven't started. I have to do some starting today.
Okay. Are you kind of like a last-minute Christmas shopper?
Always have been, yeah. That's always been kind of my nature. Fortunately, I don't have to do a lot of shopping, but today I'm going to try to get it done because, you know, next week going to Dallas, I will be in Dallas on Christmas, of course, coming back from the Seahawk game.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to create a plan, and then I just come up with a list, and then I give myself one, two, and three options, and then I just go about it. If I don't get something, then I'll go to the next one until I find something for someone that's special in my life.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying, John? John, you know, I wish I could have had a Christmas gift by the Silver and Black winning a game against the Chiefs last weekend, but boy, they took a step back after playing the Chiefs, and I'm just perplexed by the whole year. And I think there's just a combination of things. First, I don't think that, you know, we talked about their players on the defensive side. They just don't have the players to really be competitive right now. And I don't, you know, they got a new coordinator, but I don't think Pagano has really been an upgrade, frankly. You know, especially after last game. I mean, you know, you could say, okay, he gets a pass against those two other teams, but they didn't have winning records, and Kansas City does, or at least is a very competitive team. And then, you know, Todd Downing is his first year as coordinator, and I think it's been fits and starts, and I don't think that, you know, Derek Carr has actually performed very well. I think he's injured, John. I don't think he's really, you know, I think, was it, when Tony Romo had this transverse fracture, and then also Cam Newton. Help me out here, John. I mean, I think Cam Newton was at, what, 2 or 3 weeks?
Right? They each missed. They were able to, I think, come back after one game. Both guys.
I see. Okay, because I thought it was more than 2 weeks for Romo.
No, it was 1 week, one game.
Oh, but the thing is, John, each of those two guys, they had one transverse fracture. Carr's had three.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is, you know, we all like to think these guys are Supermen, but they're not. They're human beings, and they can only do so much. I think there's something going there. He just has not clicked this year. And, you know, he took a lot of the blame for their loss this past Sunday. But, you know, that's all fine and good. But, gee, John, there's just so many problems with that team. And I'm wondering, is Del Rio going to stick around?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they gave him a contract extension, so they're not going to change that.
Yeah.
See, that's one of the downsides of Del Rio, is that he makes too many changes. When things don't go right, coaches go. And yeah. So I thought that, and we talked about it, I think, I'm still stunned that they let Bill Musgrave go.
Oh, I do too. Yeah.
Musgrave, I thought, did a very good job last year, no question.
Yeah.
And everything that I heard, according to sources, is that for whatever reason, David Carr wanted to switch up and he wanted to go with Downing. And, of course, that just hasn't worked out. I mean,
right.
His short passes more than long passes,
right.
Not clicking at all with Amari Cooper. He's had a horrible year. And, you know, the run, you know, it's funny. Marshawn Lynch got spotty starts and things of that nature, but he's kind of rounding out into what I thought he was going to be, because I made the prediction he'd be somewhere between, 650 and 850 yards, and I think, what is he right now, something like 625 or something like that?
Right.
So he's kind of right where I thought he was going to be, but I didn't think he was going to be as impactful as they would want him to be. So,
right.
You know, and the run blocking has not been as good as the pass blocking. Pass blocking is very good. But
right.
There are big problems on defense.
Indeed.
And, you know, you look at what they did this offseason, you know, they lost more on defense than they gained. And I think now you can see that they are paying the price for that.
Right. And then their first-round draft pick, he had one showing in one game. He had shin injury before he came on board, and they nursed him back to health, and then he was in one or two games at the most. I think he suited up for two games and only played one game. Their second-round draft pick finally makes an appearance against the Patriots of all teams, and he plays and he gets lit up by Tom Brady, and he hasn't been seen yet, and now they put him on IR, which is not good when your first and your second-round choice go and, you know, get put off until next year. That's a lack of productivity in your draft that you just can't see. You need to have those guys produce on your team. You're looking for those guys to make an impact.
Right.
And that's really a shame. There are two different defensive players too, where they needed the help. They knew they needed the help, and then look what happened. But moving forward, I think this game tonight against the Chiefs and the Chargers are going to be great, John. It's going to be a great thing to see that. You know, I think the Chargers are going to give them a go.
I do too. Right now, if I'm picking a team to win the division, it's going to be the Chargers. Reason I'm doing that is that, you know, we all agree that all three teams have very good quarterbacks. You know, obviously Alex Smith is the third of the three, and then you debate whether who's better, whether it's David Carr or Phillip Rivers. I mean, we can debate that, but it's irrelevant. They're both very good. And so now, what I like about the Chargers is they have a defense. Right now, the Raiders and the Chiefs do not.
Right, right. I think the record for the Chargers in Kansas City, I don't think they've won against Kansas City in the last seven outings, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that's right. That's a
big
advantage.
Yeah, and that doesn't bode well for them. But, boy, they are on a tear, and that defensive line is quite remarkable. Good to see Brandon Meebane playing so well and gelling with that team, along with another ex-Seahawk, the left tackle. Is it Russell Okung?
Russell Okung, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Well, I know you've talked a lot in this market about, you know, how he negotiated his contract and how he kind of gave away the house when he went to Denver. But, you know, then he goes and he finds greater pastures in San Diego. It was good to see him land somewhere where he's needed and where he's actually performing.
Well, and, of course, what was nice is he ends up getting a great deal. I mean, he got $13.25 million a year, became the highest-paid left tackle in the league, tied for the highest-paid left tackle. Good for him. But now it's a matter that, you know, everything's got to come together. And that's why it's going to be, I think it's going to be a great day for football. Now, you know, you got the Chicago Bears going against Detroit. Detroit's trying to make that last desperation run and try to get three wins. I mean, today also you got Brett Favre is going to be coming off the injured reserve list. I mean, this is where it really ramps up. But no, this the Charger game is going to be fascinating. And also a fascinating game is going to be on Sunday night, Oakland going against the Dallas Cowboys.
That'll be a good game. That'll be a good game. I mean, both teams still are statistically in the hunt. Frankly, from in my opinion, the Raiders need a lot of help to get there, and so do the Cowboys. Should be a good matchup. You know, they do a lot of you know, before season stuff. They usually have a scrimmage every other year down in California, where the Cowboys hold camp in Camarillo. And you know, the interesting thing too is the whole relationship between the Davises and Jerry Jones. So they are two franchises that actually cooperate quite nicely, you know, in other activities, which is good to see. John, about the IR, is there any surprises out there that you found that the you know, because you said there were a lot earlier this week. Any surprises that you saw that, you know, you kind of raised an eyebrow?
Well, I mean, you can see that they're really ramping up the IR. And this happens when you get into the final 3 weeks of the season. I mean, you carry injuries as long as you can. Then you start to basically say, okay, we're out of this thing, so we're just going to move on and go with a different type of player and so all that. But, no, this is pretty – I mean, you know, I guess – no surprise that Adrian Peterson went on. You know, Cordy Glenn's been fighting that foot injury for some period of time. I think what the Justin Simmons one was a little bit unusual. I mean, he had suffered an ankle injury while he was celebrating, you know, one of his teammates getting a fumble sack. I mean, that was kind of bad. So he goes on there. You know, Trevor Siemian going on with that left shoulder injury. I mean, it's been pretty devastating this week. No surprise that Justin Pugh, who's had back problems really since I watched him on the sidelines in the Giant game against Seattle, he goes on IR. So, right now you're getting the Trenton Brown needing shoulder surgery. He's going to go on there today. I mean, I've counted up right now. There's 119 to 120 players, starters on injured reserve.
And is that more than usual, John?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's trending out right now. I mean, what I do is I take starters and I don't cheat on them. So, for example, George Fant was the starting left tackle of this team. He went down in the preseason, and sure. So that's 16 missed starts. I don't add any on. When Riso Diombo missed a game or two, I don't add on to that. And so what I have right now is that it's on pace. 2 years ago, it was 1,907 missed starts. Last year, it trended up to go 1,853. Right now, it's on pace to probably go 1,950 to 1,960, if not more. And it could get to 2,000.
Oh, my. John, you're having fun with this data, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because, and that's why I love working with the database and studying, because you find different ways to, you know, look at this thing. Like, for example, you know, now you got 119 guys on injured reserve. All right, so then you start to look at the Friday injury list, see how many starters have been scratched, and you know, count maybe 32, 33, and then you start to look at the questionables, and usually there's about 81 questionables, 82 because Kyle Rudolph was changed from doubtful to questionable, and so that tells me usually about 10 to 12 of those won't be able to play. So that means this week there's going to be about 162 to 165 starters that aren't playing.
Wow. That's amazing. Hey, getting back to Peterson real quick, isn't he at what, 2.5, maybe $3 million a year that they signed him for?
Well, yeah, it's about 3.5 his base salary next year.
Oh, okay, I was off. Okay, yeah, they're not bringing him back.
No, I can't see it. I mean, they got David Johnson. You know, they got to get younger. I mean, it was a good move on a fly basis to try to go in the fly and try to see what they can get with him, and gave him a couple good games, and then he started to wear down. The neck is a problem. So, and I just wonder if he's going to be back next year. I mean, you can see that he made a mistake by going to the Saints. They had two better running backs, and he really didn't fit in, and he doesn't fit into that offense. But he goes to Arizona. He fits into the offense, but I just wonder if he's going to be back next year in the league.
Right. And Bruce Arians, he going to be back?
Debatable. Still debatable.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, just like you. I wouldn't be surprised if he hangs it up.
No, I would agree.
Because he's just, yeah, I think you're right. He's not healthy, John, literally. And, you know, life's too short.
Yeah, and of course he's had a great career. His wife, I know, wants to go to this nice home. I think it's in South Carolina. And so, you know, I think that would be advisable to try to say, okay, let's go a different direction.
Yeah, yeah. And Fitzgerald's hanging around, it looks like.
Absolutely. Now we'll see about Carson Palmer.
Yeah, Carson Palmer. Good guy. I think Fitzgerald will be hanging out. I don't know about Palmer.
I think it's
he's
time
about
for him
done.
To go.
He's been banged up, John, and he's had his time.
Yes. Hey, Jim, thank you for the call, and have a great Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you and your wife, John. Take care.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We're off and started here. Give us a call here, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in Olympia. Hey, David.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Yeah, very rarely do I disagree with the professor, but I'm disagreeing with you on this one, John.
What's that?
I think Del Rio's gone, and I honestly, I think he should be. The Patriot game really showed me that the Raiders were not prepared to play, but I gave him a second chance in that Chief game, and the Raiders were completely unprepared to play that game, offensively and defensively, and I chalk that directly up to Del Rio. He's moving so many coordinators and players around, and I think what's really bothering me is the body language from Carr. He just does not look like he's into it, and again, I'm going to point the finger back at Del Rio on that one.
See, here's the reason, and of course, understanding economics play. For, and if are you a big Raider fan?
I'm a lifetime, born a Raider.
Okay, so you understand money is a little bit of an issue right now with Mark Davis because you know he's got so much committed into the move to Vegas, and you know, understanding that their gate. Is so small. I mean, it's one of the smallest in the league. I mean, I just going off the top of my head. I mean, they probably get about maybe what $46 to $50 million in revenue just from the games. That's about as low as Jacksonville. And so, because of that, it puts them in a tough position financially. And you understand financially, to keep this team together, they have to make big commitments. And so they were able to work it. So David Carr did a really nice thing in his contract, and what he did was he didn't demand like the $45 million, $50 million signing bonus, and so what he was able to do was taper it, you know, not pull too much in and able to get Gabe Jackson done. And so they and when you're talking about signing bonus for a player, you want the money now. Well, he doesn't have the money because, again, he has to wait for the season ticket money to come in, and then a lot of the contracts are based on base salary so that you can get it out of when you start getting paid by the TV networks during the season. So to get rid of a $5 million-plus coach like Jack Del Rio with time in his contract and then go ahead and hire somebody else, unless it's urgent, I can't see them doing it. And so I'm adding some things in there. I won't debate you that maybe this year he did not coach well enough to deserve staying on. But again, you know, Mark Davis is going to be, you know, standing by, I think, Jack Del Rio, one, because they won 12 games last year, two, because they've got a good team. But then the problem is he's got to stop changing the coaches in that. He did that in Jacksonville. He's doing it now, and he'll do it again this year. But I think he's going to be back.
Okay. I just have to respectfully disagree.
You understand, we're not just judging this year. We're judging the 2 years, or the 3 years, judging the fact that when Del Rio came in there, he did change the culture of the franchise and did help Reggie McKenzie. Instead of saying, when Reggie was going out getting third contracts for players and veterans, getting him in to get second players, but that defense was starved. And I don't know what he could have done with it, but he's not had a good season coaching, but, you know, he'll be back. And again, economics plays into it.
Here's the second thing that I've heard that made me think Del Rio's not back, because I still got a lot of family and friends who are in the Bay Area. They hear extensively that Gruden actually wants to come back to Oakland, and the only reason he wants to come back is because he wants to start off with a top-notch tier quarterback. Mm-hmm. And close out his legacy in Oakland. I've heard this, that it's not just hyperbole. There's actually some fact to it.
Oh, no, I think Gruden's going to be coaching in the league next year. but I think it's going to be Tampa Bay.
You think it's going to be Tampa?
I do.
Yeah, because he lives down there. Yeah, you're right. It could be there.
But again, if you're going to be John Gruden, and particularly at this week, right? I mean, this is the time you'll be doing it. You're going to be juggling a couple things where you're going to say, okay, what about Oakland? Would you consider it? And so, and again, he's going
to
make.
I've heard that he really wants to come back and close because he really feels like he got a raw deal coming out of Oakland, and he wants to finish. And I really think Tampa, I just don't see Jameis Winston as being any kind of solution. But I see Derek Carr as a big solution. And I don't think, from what I've heard over the years from Gruden, his biggest gripe with coming back is he does not want to come back unless he has a top-tier quarterback.
Right.
And I think Derek Carr, I just don't like Carr's body language at all. I really don't. And there's something not right. I've heard rumblings that locker room's a little unsettled. Mm-hmm. He's a bit of a Bible thumper. He kind of rubs people the wrong way. Del Rio hasn't handled it really well. I don't want to lose Derek Carr, man. This guy is way too good.
No, agreed. Well, they're not going to lose him. He makes $25 million a year, and he's under contract. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
You bet.
David, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Wayne in Port Orchard. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, John. How's it going today?
Great. How about you?
We're doing well. Hey, I just wanted to bring up our Seattle field goal kicker there, Blair Walsh. Get your feedback and input on that. As the season winds down, we look at games that we could have had if we had the field goals in place. And, coming up with the last three games of the season, I think if this guy misses one field goal, he may be out.
Could be, but
probably is not a bad thing.
Yeah, because I think the pressure is definitely on him in the last three losses. He's been 4-for-9. He's 20-for-27 during the season. It really hasn't worked out as well. But I think what they're looking at is that what on the street is going to be better. When you start to talk about Dan Carpenter and you start to talk about, the guys that have been cut so many times. I went through the list and it's pretty brutal. I mean, the one guy that I thought was going to really be a consideration was Cairo Santos, who was a good kicker last year for Kansas City. He suffered a groin injury, so they did an injury settlement, and he needed about 4 to 5 weeks to recover. So he ends up signing with Chicago, and so what happens? The groin gets bad, and so now he's out. So, it's like I think they look at it as like, okay, what can we get to replace him? And right now the options aren't as good.
Yeah, it was a shame that we actually got rid of our kicker because he was pretty good,
Yeah, but they couldn't afford $4 million a year for Steven Hauschka.
Oh, is that what the price tag was?
Yep. That they could not do. Particularly, when they're making the moves, paying $8 million for Luke Joeckel, they end up trading for Sheldon Richardson. Some of these moves you didn't anticipate, paying $4 million for Eddie Lacy. There's only so much cap room, and so you have to cut corners in some areas. And sometimes they've cut corners to try to, on the offensive line. Now you can see that they've now got a lot committed to the offensive line because you got a $9 million contract with Dwayne Brown, $9 million with Justin Britt, $8 million with Luke Joeckel. And so, there's only so many dollars to go around and a $167 million cap.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I really hope this guy can come around. I know that they're banking on him, and a lot of the fans just are – sitting at the edge of their seat every time he walks up.
Oh, understandable.
Ball.
No, he needs a good game tomorrow, without question.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the next two games are just vital. This game tomorrow, or should say Sunday, tomorrow with the Rams is going to be one tough game, and it's probably going to come down to a field goal to win it or lose it. And I'm thinking even the Dallas game in Dallas is not that's going to be a tough game.
Agreed, because if you're going to be a Seahawks fan, you're going to be rooting for Oakland tomorrow. And the reason you want to root for Oakland, if Dallas loses, then all of a sudden it sinks in. Their chances of making the playoffs are pretty dead. Because, you look at the fact that now you've got five teams at 9 wins, right? And most of those teams are having pretty easy home games. So now that only leaves one spot if they all win or whatever it comes down to. There may be by tomorrow, there may be, four teams that'll have 10 wins in the NFC. And, if you have 7 losses, math says you're out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this has been a good season as far as, you know, teams coming up and playing tough. You know, it's not anything that we, I don't think many people expected, you know, to be the way it is. But, you know, some of the friends I talk to, they think there's only about four or five teams that are just dominant, and I think that was absolutely
wrong. See, I don't think there is. I don't think there's a dominant team in the league. I guess the only two dominant teams would be Pittsburgh and New England, and they haven't played all great football this year.
No, no, and you know, when they get to the finals here, it's going to be push or shove. We're going to see what really happens.
Oh, I agree. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Hey, thank you, John. Have a great weekend, and go
have a
on.
Great Christmas. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get a preview of the game tomorrow, seeing what's going on from the Seahawks standpoint. Michael Sean Duggar joins us from PI.com, and we'll talk to him about where things are as far as injuries, where things are as far as the state of this team. It's coming up next as the John Clayton Show.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Doesn't get any bigger than this. It's going to be the battle for the NFC West coming up tomorrow. Rams coming to town against the Seattle Seahawks. Joining us right now, Michael Sean Duggar from PI.com. And, of course, we've got the podcast and all that stuff. But tell you what, Michael Sean, this one's big right now because the ramifications are, okay, are the Rams ready to start taking the torch or moving past the Seahawks in this division? Seahawks are hanging on right now. Injuries amount. How do you kind of size up this game?
Well, first of all, John, you can tell it's big. It's a big game because everyone's working so hard not to say it's a big game. You know, we had to beat it out of Pete, you know, beat it out of Doug, beat it out of Russell. Meanwhile, you look at a new guy, Bradley McDougal, steps to the podium. He's like, oh, yeah, no, it's a big game, right? Because it is, like you said, the Seahawks can't really afford to lose again, right? And then if they do that, you're probably looking at an outside shot at the playoffs as opposed to, yeah, you went out, you're in. And then, like you mentioned, it's not just this year. You know, the Rams have this young head coach. They've got what looks like could be their franchise quarterback, franchise running back, already had a talented defense. So if they beat Seattle, right, in Seattle, you know, a Russell Wilson-led Seattle team, which they beat. They've done before under Jeff Fisher, but that was like spooky voodoo Jeff had over Pete. So if they do it now in December when Russell Wilson and the Seahawks are usually money, then you're looking at a – oh, my goodness, is Seattle no longer the big bully on the corner in the NFC West? So, yeah, this is a big game in multiple ways.
And, of course, I mean, it's I guess, not surprising the negativity nationwide and even the apprehension locally because, I mean, the fact that this team's had three losses here down the stretch, particularly two of those at home, uncharacteristic of this team, but also a sign that, okay, age is starting to creep in, injuries are starting to play an attrition role in this game. And so, you know, how do you think this team now sizes up against the Ram team?
Yeah, you know, speaking of those injuries, right, it's like if in September you'd have told Seattle, okay, cool, you get Los Angeles at home in December for the division. You know, they take it. They say, oh, cool, no sweat. Then you say, wait, there's a huge asterisk, right? You don't have Cliff. You don't have Richard. You don't have Cam. You might not have Bobby. You might not have KJ. You're like, oh, can we do that over? I mean, like, there's a lot missing here. But it's even amazing that, like, Seattle's one, like, still favored and expected to win this game. Like, that's – when I look at the matchup, obviously if Bobby and KJ don't play, they're in trouble. Like, there's no way around that. When you just think about how many Pro Bowlers did I just name? A million?
Well, yeah, they started the season with 8 Pro Bowlers on defense. If KJ and Bobby Wagner don't play, they're down to 3. That's 5 Pro Bowl players.
That is insane, right? But then even then, you think, oh, well, there's somebody asked me the other day, are the Seahawks going to win tomorrow or on Sunday? I said, well, yeah, they should, right? Mm-hmm. They should still win. And call it the power of the 12th man, the magic of Russell Wilson, whatever you want to call it. But it's just amazing just when I think about it in that way that they still should win this game against a team that's, you know, arguably probably better just top to bottom.
Right. Well, and see, that's the thought I had last week when the Eagles went down and played the Rams after playing here is that I thought the Eagles would win because I thought the Eagles were the better team, and they won, even though they lost Carson Palmer. Now, the question, you know that the Seahawks, at least in the first game, even though they gave up 375 yards, they still only gave up 10 points. You know, they were the better team then. They won on the road. But now with the injuries, are they the better team? I still think that the depth of this team is good enough to put them a slight edge ahead of the Rams, because I thought that they've done a real good job of building up the depth. I mean, to a point where you can be down 2 to 3 cornerbacks and put out starting caliber cornerbacks. I mean, there's enough depth on the offensive line. Obviously, the running game, that just went south until Mike Davis at least showed some flashes. You know, they're deep at wide receiver. They're deep on the defensive line, but they're thin at linebacker. That's a problem.
Well, and then even then, right, I like Michael Wilhoy, who he's backed up in his career. You know, he's backing up guys like I can't remember anybody's name.
Well, Navarro Bowman and the great linebackers that were there in San Francisco. He's been backing them up his entire career.
Yeah, look who he's backing up, and now he's backing up Bobby. Wilhoy can play. And you mentioned the corners. Yeah, you're throwing in guys like Byron, who started in the system. They got Lane on the bench. A starter in the, guy who picked off Brady in the Super Bowl. Our Bradley McDougal, like you mentioned, the depth is not just something they were sounding good in August. This is one of those years where it's like, oh, Pete and John kind of knew what they were talking about when they said that. You know, even if that's guys like Marcus Smith off the bench or even a Nas Jones, who won't play on Sunday. But yeah, the way they've constructed this team, at least on defense, the depth is impressive. I don't want to just toot the horn at Schneider all day, but I mean, he does deserve some credit. The whole just department does for just, they've been able to just put a bunch of guys out there who just have experience and done this before. And when you're talking about games for the division, I mean, that's really the most you can ask for when half of your team is on IR.
Right, exactly. All right, let's go through a couple of the injuries. I'm still kind of stunned and surprised about K.J. Wright. I know talking to him after the game, he said he was going to be fine. And then, a lot of times with concussions, I mean, you get back home and a day later, things just aren't right. And I guess he's going to go through some concussion protocol today. He's doubtful, not expected to play. I mean, is there any chance that you think he can pass protocol and actually go to questionable and may have a chance to play?
Is there a chance? Yeah, I mean, there's a chance Jerry Goff goes for 8 touchdowns on Sunday. I mean, there's a chance for everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But look, this year alone, the guys who have been in the concussion protocol, I think Shaq at least missed a game, Shaq Griffin, that is, and then Smith, I believe, also at least missed a game on the quick turn at Arizona. But still, regardless, still missed a game. It's expected that KJ at least misses one. I mean, like you mentioned, concussions are just tricky, and then if you don't practice all week, obviously there's steps to the returning in protocol, but just if you don't practice all week, when you're on a pro, when you're in a team that just hasn't really had anyone have a concussion and then come right back the next week, and it's not like he's going to be in the people, but like, he got hurt. That was a routine just block, and boom, he didn't, didn't get up. So I probably wouldn't expect KJ out there. Is there a chance? Yeah, but I don't think it's a risk that they're willing to take with a guy who's so important.
What about what you see from Bobby Wagner? I was kind of surprised that he did get questionable, and I guess there is a chance.
Bobby seems just as stubborn as Richard when it comes to the injuries. It also sounds like Earl is that way too, but like Bobby and Richard will be more vocal about it. They'd probably play with one leg if they could. Sherman told me after I think they beat Philly, he played with the scooter that he's on, if they'd let him. But I think we agreed it would count as a PED.
Right.
But in terms of Bobby, it sounds like I would expect him to play. That's because he's been able to play through it enough, and him actually not practicing, I think, is a good thing, as opposed to KJ not practicing. KJ probably needed to get out there and do some work, whereas not playing probably helped Bobby, just had he had not been practicing before and still playing with the injury. So with him, and also just it seems like Pete would kind of trust his lobbying a little bit more than someone else, especially, again, saying that he's played with it before. So, yeah, I expect Bobby out there. KJ, not so much. But, whew, having Bobby out there at least matters, right, when the other team has Todd Gurley.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no question. Because that's going to be the challenge. You know, Gurley only had like about 43 yards in the first game, and they did a good job of containing him. But so much of what that was either the penetration of Sheldon Richardson, Jaron Reed, and then also just the great tackling by K.J. Wright and by Bobby Wagner.
Yeah, the more you think about it, you know, everyone on the Seahawks defense is important, like those pro bowlers. You know, it's important. Cam, Earl, Sherman, like, they're all important, right? But then you really see Earl's there, right? Because then you can see when a Bobby's not there, it's like, oh, yeah, we just gave up on 3rd and 11 to lose a game just now. Like, you can see it a bit more. Obviously, you see it when Cam is not out there. You see it when Sherman is not out there, when Blake Bortles is able to complete 29-yard passes against, you know, man-to-man coverage, and Matt Ryan's able to do the same thing, Kirk Cousins is as well. But you just kind of, Bobby and Earl, I'd say, just have that. It's a little bit bigger, right? If Jared Goff comes to the line and he's looking for the mic, and it's Michael Wilhoit instead of Bobby Wagner, even as talented as Michael is, it's just different. It's different for Jared's head, for Gurley's head, for everyone's head. And that's why it's so important that I think he's going to be out there. If they were going to have one of the two, Bobby or KJ, I think it's much more pivotal that they have Bobby out there.
Yeah, because both communication, and then, again, you're talking about a player that's playing at a level as a defensive player of the year.
Right, yeah, and that's not exaggeration. You know, that's Bobby Wagner playing like the best defensive player in football in a league that has a ton of talented defensive players. Heck, there's talented defensive players on his own team, right? It's like, yeah, next man up, but the next man ain't Bobby. It's just that simple.
What do you see happening on the offense? Obviously, one of the keys to this game is to get a running game. Michael Davis, if he can stay healthy, seems to have the ability to get him 60 yards. I mean, there's no other option other than maybe a few screen passes and quick runs by J.D. McKissic. I mean, they've given up on Thomas Rawls, and they've also given up on Eddie Lacy.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing with the Seahawks run game, right? Because it's perspective. So someone runs for 60 yards on the Seahawks, and you would, depending on who the running back is, you consider that shutting them down, right? Or even if it's 50 yards. Someone on the Seahawks runs for 50, 60 yards, and it's like, oh, we got our guy, give him an extension. So just, like, put it in perspective, like, Mike Davis is good, but they still need more from that position. I mean, he got, 64 yards against the Eagles on 16 carries, but got 17 of those on that pitch.
Right.
Like, a magic play. I don't think he's credited for a carry. So that's, like, really 15 yards. Every time he was handed the ball for 40 or something, I didn't do well in math, but yeah, you see the average there is a bit different when you look at it that way. And you mentioned if Mike can stay healthy, but Mike's played in three or four games, and only finished one. I think he only finished the Eagles game. I mean, and then he missed the Niners game. His health is now a thing. You know, it's not like at CJ Prosize level, but that you have to worry about that. Can Mike Davis finish a game and be productive like he was in the Eagles game, but just with even more yardage, you know, kind of a better yards per carry average, because that's really what's going to be important. Tom Cable likes to mention getting rid of those negative runs, which they should be better at this time with Luke and Dwayne Brown on the left. But I think, yeah, Mike Davis is that huge question mark, because they're going to need him not to, like, I think a 50, 60-yard game will be okay, but they kind of need a breakout game in there. We're going to be missing guys on defense. And like you mentioned, it's a big one for the division.
No doubt about it. What's your thoughts on the Rams and how they've kind of evolved?
Aren't the Rams fun?
Oh, they are. Like, I love that team.
Objectively, like, looking at, like, Pete kind of mentions it too, they're fun top to bottom. You know, they can put up 30 with the offense, but, you know, they can also just put up 15 with the offense and then get you a pick six, or, you know, they might, I mean, they block, what, 3 kicks? Already this year. I mean, they ran one back against, I mean, they beat Jacksonville just on special teams, right? I think they blocked a punt in that game and ran a kickoff back at the Jaguars. I mean, the Rams are not only good, they're fun, and they're well coached. And that obviously that's important when you're going against a Pete Carroll team. Like, the Rams are just fun. Like, that's all I can think of. You know, they lose Robert Woods after he's playing great, and then boom, Sammy Watkins is scoring every week. You know, that's good coaching, and that's a good team. Now, this is a scary team that can come in here and get a win.
So now the big thing for them is can they do this on the road in a different environment with a young quarterback and a loud environment?
Yeah, that's the thing. This is going to be that test. I mean, really, we see the Rams have been tested in the past few weeks, you know, playing New Orleans, a playoff team, playing Philly, a playoff team. You know, that'll be the real test. But the thing is, when you're a well-coached team, you know, we've seen it with Pete Carroll, or you see it with, you know, Bill Belichick's teams, or, you know, just anyone, Mike Tomlin's teams, you know, the Harbaugh teams. When you're a well-coached team, you can make things happen on the road. Like, as cliche as it is just really about just execute, discipline, all that other stuff. Doesn't matter how loud it is, if you know your gap, you fill your gap on defense, and make the tackle. Boom. You know, no matter how loud it is, you run your route, the ball comes to you, you put your hands up, and you catch it. And no matter how loud it is, you line up, and the kicker, you put it through the upright. You know, the good teams and the well-coached teams can do that. And when you are able to do that consistently, you kind of take that step as a team, that kind of that torch passing we were talking about. Can the Rams do that? That's a great question. I think they can. Will they is another question.
So what do you think happens tomorrow? Win, lose, draw? How's it go?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think the Seahawks pull it off. I think we're going to see something very similar to I think actually we're going to see some points tomorrow. I think we – not as much as like Houston, where it was just absent of defense for about 50 minutes. I think we're going to see some points tomorrow, and I think the Seahawks are going to – win a close one. One of those games where you're like, oh, wow, how did Seattle do that? They were dead in the water at this time. I don't know a score, maybe in the upper 20s with the Seahawks winning. I'd say they win probably a nail biter, one or two points, something real, real tight. Yeah, Seahawks by like one or two.
That's Michael Sean Duggar, UPI.com. Now, what, and of course, the podcast. How do we get on the podcast?
You can find the podcast on iTunes, Seahawks Man to Man. That's man, numeral two, man. Also find it on SeattlePI.com and vsporto.com, Seahawks Radio.
That'll be great. And so we'll see you tomorrow at the game. It'll be a big one.
All right. Thanks for having me, John. Take
Michael
care.
Michael Sean Duggar, of course, getting ready for this one. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ed. Ed, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. How you doing, Mr. Clayton?
Doing well.
I was listening earlier when the fellow brought up the kicker situation.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he wasn't listening the other day when Coach Holmgren kind of gave his example about that with Chris Jackie.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yes, so you could go in and look at the board, and nobody's out there. You echoed my thoughts when you mentioned that. So there's probably what we're going to have is right there. But I have a question for you. Do you think the other teammates kind of like get around the kicker when he's down, or is it just the kickers that get with kickers?
Pretty much kickers get with kickers. I mean, it's like it's not like they're out there on their own totally, but you know, kickers work a different type of system. I mean, you know, for example, it's funny. I know that somebody brought up the idea. It's like, oh, how about the panic of Blair Walsh going over and the CenturyLink and trying to kick? Well, that's been a tradition for this team since Steven Hauschka came in there. Steven Hauschka learned, it's like, hey, let's go over there, try to work some things out, see how it's going to be at the stadium, pick up a little nuances. And so this is just another generation of kicker that is following what they do. It's like, okay, take a day of the week, go over, see how it's going to be at Safeco, particularly when you're coming up to a home game. So that's not unusual. But, yeah, it's like you don't know sometimes if you're going to get a replacement, if the replacement's going to be any better.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if the like linebackers and guys like that are like, oh, you know, kickers are whamps and all that, but then they also know they win games for them and win
right.
Big games for them. So
they don't think they take it as well when they start to lose games for them. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right. Well, I appreciate your time, Mr. Clayton.
All right, Ed. Thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We missed him at the beginning of the show, but now we go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing this fine Saturday morning, sir?
Doing well. How are you? Where you been? We missed you.
I'm okay, Mr. Clayton. It was just a little technical difficulty.
Oh, okay.
Understood. But I'm here. That's okay. All that matters, sir.
That is true.
You know, hey, you were talking about the kickers need to be somebody go ahead and help them. The punter goes over there and puts his hand on his shoulder, Mr. Clayton, and tell him,
he was talking about the position players.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know you're talking about some of the position players. Well, you know, I've seen some position players go in and give a kicker a tap on the helmet, you know, when something happens wrong. He tends to just go sit by himself anyway, you know. So that's just how it is sometimes for a life of a kicker.
Right.
You know. But Mr. Clayton, we got some serious stuff. Sean Payton, can I calm Sean down? I don't need no more personal fouls that's costing me key situations in games.
No, I agree. I mean, that he got out of control without question.
Yeah. And with all the situations going on in that game with guys going down, they still was having the opportunity to either tie the game or go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, on that last play, if you watch the game, do you think you would have ran that ball? You had two timeouts left in that game.
Yeah, I think it was so far out by that point that it wasn't going to make a change of anything that was going to go on.
No. So, looking forward to Sunday with the Jets. The Jets coming in with a young quarterback and all of this and that. I hope we don't take them lightly and just go do what we have to do. How do you see that projecting the turnout?
I think they're going to be fine.
Muhammad.
No, they'll be fine because I think, you know, you're not going to get beat by Bryce Petty. I mean, you think about that. Bryce Petty going up against Drew Brees. Do you really worry about that?
True.
They're going to be in good shape there. That's where the schedule helps them out because now you get a team at the right time. I mean, Josh McCown still probably going to beat the Saints, but, you know, I think that they'll focus and they'll definitely come back and win this one.
Yeah. Now the key is we got to win the last three out to take the division, right?
Right.
Yeah. Not dealing with Carolina.
Carolina and all the teams in the division have tough games coming up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's the toughest closing schedule. It's the best division, but it's the toughest closing schedule.
Yeah, there's a tough, yeah. What about Carolina and Green Bay Sunday? I'm just hoping. You think Aaron Rodgers could come back out there and just put it on them?
I think so. I really do.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I think that's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you know, he is, they haven't activated him yet, but you know what's going to happen. But, no, I think he can definitely come back. And, you know, I think he's good enough to win three in a row.
Wow. You think they can get to 10 games and make the playoffs?
No. I think they can get to 10 games, but I don't know if the tiebreaker is going to work enough for them to get to the playoffs.
Yeah,
I think they can get to 10.
It's not in their favor right now as far as that's concerned with Minnesota leading their division right now. There's going to be a couple of 10-win teams not make the playoffs.
I agree.
Mr. Clayton.
It's a repeat of, 2012, I think.
Yeah, you know, I don't see it. It's too tight. Right now, as far as concerned, I don't think if Dallas is sitting there, like you said earlier, if anybody gets to seven losses, you're done.
Yes.
It's
hey,
over
JB, I've got to run here, so have a good Christmas.
Mr. Clinton, do the same, sir. Merry Christmas, sir.
Merry
I'll see you next time.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.